About 75% of it is owned either by domestic or foreign investors, including foreign nations. An actual default would be much worse. Not only would the U.S. likely be downgraded again, but government workers and Social Security recipients, among many others, would go unpaid.
Hello and welcome to the Quick Take section. I'm Matti Apposian. Surpassing the debt ceiling is another way of saying I have spent too much and hence I need more money. As careless as that may sound, the U.S. has time and again breached its debt limit. And here are some more facts on the repercussions. A downgrade by credit rating agencies is not far off the mark, something that has happened before. This incurs increased borrowing costs for businesses and homeowners. Consumer confidence gets impacted, which could lead the economy into recession.
A default on our debt would produce an economic and financial catastrophe. Many of your residents could ultimately lose their jobs. Household payments on mortgages, auto loans, and credit cards would rise, and American businesses would see credit markets deteriorate.
Goldman Sachs has a more dire prediction of what would happen if the debt limit is breached. It said it would halt about one-tenth of U.S. economic activity. If that happened, this would cause the loss of 3 million jobs. Then comes the impact on interest rates, which would be catastrophic, raising the national debt by $850 billion. This would divert taxpayer money away from things like infrastructure, education, and healthcare. Our final question would be, could breaching the U.S. debt ceiling bring down other markets? First, the U.S. dollar standing would take a severe hit, impacting global financial markets. The creditworthiness of U.S. Treasury securities has long bolstered demand for U.S. dollars, contributing to their value and status as the world's reserve currency. Any hit to confidence in the U.S. economy, whether from default or the uncertainty surrounding it, would cause investors to sell U.S. Treasury bonds and thus weaken the dollar. That does it for this Quick Take section.
When it comes to the U.S. debt ceiling, as of the recording of this program, which was on May 1st, Labor Day, the U.S. House Speaker Kevin McCarthy has said that the U.S. President Joe Biden should, quote, sit down and negotiate. Well, this came after the House passed his debt ceiling bill, which would raise the national borrowing limit, but it's only in conjunction with drastic spending cuts. Well, the deeper issue here is not that, but why the U.S. creates money without any backing to cover spending that wasn't in the budget in the first place, while subjecting Americans and even the world financial markets to U.S.'s party wrangling. From me, Kovit Hakway, and the entire team here at Economic Divide, it's goodbye until the next program.
Your option, our task. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio. In the limelight.
At a time when economic conditions in Britain are their worst in the last half a century due to several consecutive crises, the coronation ceremony of King Charles III was held at a cost of more than £250 million. There was also a huge operation to ensure the security at the coronation. We have taken a look at some of the world press and media's coverage of this issue. Please stay with us. The American newspaper The Hill has covered this story and tells us more. The coronation of King Charles III in London's historic Westminster Abbey, the first in the United Kingdom for seven decades, drew thousands of people into the streets to protest against the antiquated monarchical system. The King and Queen Camilla were formally crowned on Saturday, 6th of May, at a ceremony attended by more than 2,000 guests, including world leaders, aristocrats and celebrities. Trumpets sounded inside the medieval Westminster Abbey and the congregation shouted, "God save the King!" And outside in the streets, thousands of troops, tens of thousands of spectators and thousands of protesters converged. The Metropolitan Police deployed some 11,500 police officers for one of its biggest ever security operations for the day of the coronation. Condemnations poured in after the arrest of leading members of the anti-monarchy group, The Republic. The Metropolitan Police, Britain's largest police force, had warned it would have an extremely low threshold for protests and controversially planned to use mass facial recognition technology to monitor the crowds. The police force wrote on Twitter recently, "Our tolerance for any disruption, whether through protest or otherwise, will be low. We will deal robustly with anyone intent on undermining the celebration." The Metropolitan Police arrested the leader of the Republic and 51 others at the coronation, claiming that their duty to prevent disruption outweighs the right to protest. The American broadcaster ABC News has also covered this story. Demonstrators gathered among the 10-deep crowds lining the procession route in central London to stand out from those clad in red, white and blue and to hold up signs saying, "Not my king." The Republic group said its leader, Graham Smith, had been arrested by police before the procession began and police officers seized the placards of the protesters. A photo posted on Twitter showed that Graham Smith sitting on the ground surrounded by a group of police officers. An officer at the scene said several Republican protesters had been arrested. A Republic activist said in London's Trafalgar Square that they have arrested six of our organisers and seized hundreds of placards. They won't tell us why they've arrested them or where they're being held. Yasmin Ahmed, the UK director of Human Rights Watch, condemned the arrest, saying the reports of people being arrested for peacefully protesting the coronation are incredibly alarming. Peaceful protests allow individuals to hold those in power to account, something that the British government seems increasingly averse to. Commander Karen Finley of the London Metropolitan Police claimed in a statement, "We absolutely understand public concern following the arrest that we made this morning. Over the past 24 hours, there has been a significant police operation after we received information that protesters were determined to disrupt the coronation procession." Emmanuel Andrews of the human rights group Liberty said on Twitter, "We all have the right to go about our lives without being watched and monitored, but everyone at the coronation is at risk of having their faces scanned by oppressive facial recognition technology." The protests come amid growing concerns over the increase in police's power to stifle dissent in Britain, following the recent introduction of a controversial public order bill, which empowers British police to take stronger action against peaceful protesters. Parts of the legislation came into force on Wednesday, 3rd of May, just days ahead of the coronation. US President Joe Biden congratulated King Charles III and his queen, Queen Consort Camilla, on their coronation on Saturday. Joe Biden did not attend the ceremony. The United States was represented instead by the First Lady, Jill Biden. The Reuters news agency has also covered the same story and tells us more. Supporters and members of Britain's main anti-monarchy movement, The Republic, have rallied in London before the coronation of King Charles III on Saturday, 6th of May. Protester Colin Deer, a teacher, said, "I don't believe in hereditary monarchy, and I think this is costing a huge amount of money when lots of people are struggling and the economy is falling apart and the public services are awful. And we need to invest in that and not in King Charles III and his big coronation party." The Republic, a group founded in 1983 that campaigns for an elected head of state, said it believes that King Charles's accession to the throne presents their best chance of ending the monarchy in the United Kingdom. The protesters gathered mainly at Trafalgar Square along the procession route next to a statue of King Charles I, who was beheaded in 1649, leading to a short-lived republic. In recent interview with the Reuters news agency, the leader of the Republic group, Graham Smith, said he expected over 1,000 people dressed in yellow shirts to join the protests on Saturday, 6th of May, where they will hold placards and give speeches. An environmental protest group, Just Stop Oil, said that around 20 of its demonstrators were detained by police, including a 33-year-old doctor who was planning to peacefully hold a sign which read, "Just Stop Oil." 30-year-old Harry Stratton said the amount of public money being spent on a parade for someone who's already king, when there's homeless people sitting on the steps of Westminster Abbey right now, is crazy. Harry Stratton even said the police warned of shooting anyone who got in the way of their coronation. Amid the cost of living crisis that is bringing misery for millions of British people, there is criticism that the event should not have been publicly funded, and a question whether it will be money well spent. The recent opinion poll carried out by YouGov revealed that 52% of Londoners did not believe that the coronation should be paid for by the taxpayer. And another study by the National Centre for Social Research revealed that only 3 out of 10 Britons believe that the monarchy is very important. The expensive coronation ceremony comes as the latest figures show that Britain's inflation stands at over 10%, its highest level in the past 4 decades. The inflationary spiral is growing at a much faster pace than the average pay rise across the country, with food prices skyrocketing in Britain almost by 20%. Increasing energy prices along with soaring energy costs have also largely contributed to Britain's cost of living crisis.
Wildfires in Greece, Turkey, the United States.
Palestinian prisoners in Israeli jails continue to engage in hunger strikes.
Kim Yo-jong, the powerful sister of North Korean leader.
On the news line.
The sounding bell at the U.S. stock market, symbolic of a stock market that should be performing well. But these cheers are not reflective of what is going on in the U.S. economy. Instead, warning signs should be going off due to the U.S. banking sector. Trading was halted in shares of two more U.S. lenders. Regulators had to step in after PacWest and Western Alliance shares plunged. Although there was optimism in Wall Street after stocks, like in the banking sector, jumped Friday following a good jobs report and strong Apple earnings, there were still fears and worries about the sector after the failure of four mid-sized banks since early March. Bank customers and investors feared a repeat of other bank failures in the U.S., like First Republic, SVB, and Signature. And those fears are justified. As many as 16 mid-sized banks have shed more than $57 billion in market value since last Friday. American regulators seized then-sold First Republic Bank to J.P. Morgan Chase on Monday, marking the second-largest ever U.S. bank collapse and the third major bank shutdown nationwide in the past 2 months, following the collapse of Silicon Valley Bank, or SVB, and Signature Bank.
Today, the Federal Reserve issued its long-awaited report on the cause of the Silicon Valley Bank failure. And while it put the failure squarely in the hands of management and its board for failing to oversee a safe and sound business plan, the Fed did put some heat on itself that its own bank regulators did not respond quickly enough and forcefully enough to conditions on the ground. And these conditions also are conditions that First Republic faced.
The question that is being raised once again is, are we witnessing a repeat of the U.S. financial crisis? Since 2001, more than 500 banks across the U.S. have closed. Most happened after the 2008 financial crisis. Of all the banks that closed since 2001, the largest was Washington Mutual, which closed in September 2008, during the early stages of the financial crisis. The closure of First Republic is the second largest bank closure in the U.S. and the largest since the end of the financial crisis. But this is what stands out for those that believe that there is another financial crisis in the making. About 70 banks across the U.S. have closed over the past decade. The total assets of the three banks closed this year has exceeded the total assets of the 25 banks that closed in 2008, meaning that the scale of U.S. bank closures in 2023 is the largest in years.
In this case, you had a group of banks here that did not plan well for interest rate risk. They did not plan well for big growth, explosive growth. They didn't plan for what they should be planning for, and that's a liquidity event where you have more than ordinary numbers of withdrawals, especially given their levels of uninsured deposits. That's a problem. And so, you know, the chickens have kind of come home to roost for all of these banks.
As seen here, the three banks, namely First Republic, Silicon Valley Bank, and Signature Bank, held a total of $532 billion in assets. That is more than the $526 billion, when adjusted for inflation, held by the 25 banks that collapsed in 2008, at the height of the global financial crisis. There are major factors that are affecting the health of U.S. banks. One of them are the recent Fed hikes. In March of this year, a study jointly released by economists from multiple universities in the U.S. showed that the Fed's rate hike greatly increased the vulnerability of the U.S. banking system.
Fed, just as they were stubborn and obstinate on the idea that inflation was transitory, they're being stubborn and obstinate on the idea that they need to hit 2% inflation before they let up on the tightening. And that's simply just history doesn't bear it out. And unless and until they come to that realization by studying history, you're going to see more and more of these situations.
Affected by the Federal Reserve's aggressive interest rate hikes, the value of financial assets like bonds held by many U.S. banks has shrunk sharply, and the asset value of some banks has even decreased by more than 20%. According to the study, if market confidence continues to weaken and more depositors withdraw their deposits, as many as 186 banks may become insolvent and face the risk of closure. That should be a major concern for the Fed and the man on top, the U.S. President Joe Biden. Another item of concern for the U.S. administration is the U.S. debt ceiling. As it stands, the Biden administration remains at odds with Republicans who have refused to increase the debt ceiling.
Our MAGA Republicans in Congress are threatening to undo all this progress by letting us, quote, default on the debt unless we agree to their demands. The two are totally unrelated. Whether you pay the debt or not doesn't have a damn thing to do with what your budget is. What your budget is. Where are you going to spend money? How are you going to raise the money? What are you going to cut? What are you going to... They're two separate issues.
If the debt ceiling, which has reached its peak of $31.4 trillion, is not raised, that could potentially lead to a government shutdown on June 1st. The U.S. government reaction so far, in terms of an intervention, has been subdued. The Sentry says even though U.S. banks are failing, it is reported that U.S. authorities are unlikely to intervene. The reason given? Regional lenders, such as PacWest and Western Alliance, are not seen as systemically important, and more consolidation is predicted to be ahead. The outlook, however, looks bleak. Unless the Fed rides to the rescue with cuts in interest rates, the options are amalgamation, regulation, or more banks going bust. The response of the U.S. authorities suggests little appetite for a laissez-faire approach. While the U.S. is struggling with these economic issues, it is also facing the prospects of de-dollarization, which is uncontrollable since many countries are queuing up to wean their economy off the dollar. Russia has accused Ukraine of attacking the Kremlin with drones in a failed assassination attempt to kill President Vladimir Putin, vowing retaliation for what it has called a terrorist attack. Moscow has said the two drones were used in the alleged attack on Putin's residence in the Kremlin's citadel overnight, adding that the drones were disabled by electronic defenses.
It is technically possible. Ukraine has several types of drones that can fit the profile. For example, its newly developed UJ-22 drone can actually fly the distance. It's a commercial drone that they acquired from China. It's Mugen 5 cargo drone, which can be basically purchased online and could be refitted into a military drone. That drone can fly several hundred kilometers, and it was used in previous attacks.
Kremlin statement said, "We regard these actions as a planned terrorist act and an attempt on the president's life carried out on the eve of Victory Day, the May 9 parade, at which the presence of foreign guests is also planned."
And of course, attacks of this kind, if they are in fact carried by Ukrainian military, are meant to keep the Russian military off balance by forcing them to reallocate and rededicate air defense resources to specific places like Moscow, probably at the expense of other regions, including, for example, Russian military inside Ukraine proper, that has to have enough air defense and electronic warfare protection.
Separately, the Speaker of Russia's parliament demanded the use of, quote, weapons capable of stopping and destroying the Kiev terrorist regime, response to the alleged attack on Kremlin. However, Ukraine denied any involvement in the alleged drone operation. Kiev has said the attack was, quote, staged by Moscow.
The Russians may try to leverage this narrative around an assassination on Putin to then up their game with regards to pretext to up their game to go after Zelensky himself. But they've been trying to do that anyway since the beginning of the war. There's plenty of reporting that indicates Russian kind of kill teams were out there trying to hunt down both Zelensky and his family. So it's mainly, I think, a rally around the flag effect that the Russians are going for.
Meanwhile, Ukraine says Russia has targeted cities in a new wave of missile strikes and shelling across the country. Officials and media outlets say multiple explosions were heard in the capital, Kiev, and elsewhere. Blasts caused by Russian shelling were also reported in the southern Zaporizhzhia region and the port city of Odessa. Kiev and some central and eastern Ukrainian regions have announced air alerts following the Russian statements accusing Ukraine of attacking the Kremlin. There are now some reports that Ukrainian forces have begun their counterattack in Bakhmut. Russian officials have said Ukraine's counteroffensive against Russia will have no benefit and will only lead to more bloodshed. The U.S. and its allies have put much hope in the offensive. However, leaked documents show Western military officials do not expect Ukraine to regain as much territory. Ukrainian forces have also been using lots of manpower and other resources fighting in Bakhmut. The intensifying crisis comes amid fresh U.S. military aid to Ukraine. The U.S. is sending another $300 million military aid package to Ukraine, including, for the first time, short-range air-launched rockets, deepening its involvement in the war in defiance of repeated warnings by Russia. The package includes Hydra 70 rockets, which are unguided projectiles fired from aircraft. It also includes artillery rounds, 155mm howitzer cannons, anti-tank missiles, and mortars. The Pentagon has also sent at least 20 high-mobility artillery rocket systems, HIMARS, to Ukraine. HIMARS systems, which are made by Lockheed Martin, are intended to be a core component of Ukraine's fighting force in the future. The package brings the total amount of U.S. military aid to about $36 billion. The U.S. is still drawing funds for military assistance to Ukraine from the $45 billion aid package that Congress authorized in December.
Running against Russia, being nasty to Russia, is very popular. But I'll tell you what's not popular. More than 60% of the American people do not like all the money we're spending on Ukraine. And the American media is not reporting that, and it's also not reporting that there's demonstrations are going every weekend in Europe, particularly in Germany. There's a lot of demonstrations, not about the pipeline, against the war, the money that's being spent on Ukraine, and the whole notion of that war, and the whole rationale for the war. And you can almost understand why Biden wanted to keep Germany from having the option to open the pipeline.
The $45 billion is expected to be exhausted by the summer, meaning the White House might ask Congress for more funds soon. The U.S. and its Western allies have kept feeding Ukraine with massive amounts of arms since the start of the war last year. Moscow has time and again warned that military assistance will only prolong the war.
A well-known resistance actor within the Palestinian prisoners movement, Hador Adnan, has passed away on the 86th day of his hunger strike inside an Israeli prison following two decades of arrests. Hador spent nearly a fifth of his life behind bars, arrested 12 times by Israeli forces and subjected to over 8 years of captivity. He used hunger strikes to take power back and mobilize the world outside his prison cell in support of the Palestinian prisoners' struggle. Sustained arbitrary arrests and medical neglect led to Khadr's death. The Palestinian Human Rights Organizations Council thus viewed Khadr's killing as premeditated murder by the Israeli regime. Israeli prison services were holding Khadr in solitary confinement and refused his family visitation rights right up to his death. He survived by his wife and 9 children. In his lifetime, Hador Adnan carried out 6 hunger strikes. His first protest in 2004 lasted 25 days and popularized hunger strikes as an accessible means of resistance within the regime's military prison system. His second hunger strike in 2012, that lasted 66 days, was joined by hundreds of prisoners and triggered an international movement for the freedom of Palestinian prisoners. In 2015, he went on his third hunger strike for 56 days against another administrative detention. In 2017, Khadr was again arrested and went on a 58-day hunger strike. His fifth 25-day-long strike was directed at his penultimate arrest in 2021. During his most recent arrest in February, Israeli forces raided his home and terrorized his family. Khadr was no stranger to civil disobedience, therefore responded by immediately going on an open hunger strike. Israeli prison services retaliated with isolation orders, renewed every 2 weeks without review. He was held under deplorable conditions and was subjected to regular abuses. When Khadr fell seriously ill in April, ISP refused to transfer him to a hospital. Khadr was found unconscious in isolation in Ramallah Prison Clinic on May 2nd. Using deliberate medical neglect, indefinite isolation, and detention extensions, the regime foresaw and facilitated Khadr's death. He was killed behind the bars, a fate shared by over 233 Palestinian political prisoners. The international community's failure to intervene amplifies past evidence that international law is just a tool for the colonizer regime of Israel, not Palestinians. It shows that the international community aids and abets the Israeli regime's crimes by its deafening silence that today rings loud after the death of Hadar Adnan. Palestinians rallied in Gaza City as shops closed during a general strike following the death of Palestinian hunger striker Hadar Adnan in Israeli custody. In his hometown near Jenin, in the occupied West Bank, Adnan's 9-year-old son, Ali, led a protest march. Palestinian Prime Minister Mohammad Shataya described the death of Adnan, who was arrested in the occupied West Bank, as a deliberate assassination.
The Palestinian cabinet holds the Israeli occupation, the prison authorities and all its agencies fully accountable for the martyrdom of Qadir Adnan. And we consider this a deliberate assassination by rejecting his request for release, neglecting him medically and keeping him in his cell despite the seriousness of his health condition.
Also, different Palestinian factions held the regime responsible for his death, saying that Israel will pay dearly for its crime.
The occupation bears full responsibility, and we will carry out our role in confronting those crimes and those assaults, in particular this crime which led to the martyrdom of Sheikh Hero Hadar Adnan.
Gaza-based Hamas resistance movement has also warned that the Israeli crime will not go unanswered. Also, the Fatah movement of President Mahmoud Abbas has called for immediate international action in support of Palestinians languishing in Israeli jails. According to Palestinian Prisoner Society, 4,900 Palestinian detainees are currently in Israeli jails, with 1,000 of them being held in administrative detention without charge. That's the highest number since 2003. People squeezed by inflation and demanding economic justice took to streets across Europe to mark May Day in an outpouring of worker discontent not seen since before the worldwide COVID-19 lockdowns. But what is May Day and why is it celebrated on May 1st? Also referred to as International Workers' Day, people across the world commemorate the contributions of workers and the labor movement on this day. Although observed as an ancient Northern Hemisphere spring festival initially, May 1st became associated with the labor movement in the late 19th century, after trade unions and socialist groups decided to designate it as a day in support of the working-class people. The decision was taken in memory of Chicago's Haymarket Affair, which took place on May 4, 1886, when a violent clash broke out between the police and labor protesters. The incident happened after a bomb went off at Haymarket Square in Chicago, where the police had arrived to break a peaceful rally. Ultimately, 7 police officers were killed and 60 others were injured before the violence ended. It's estimated that 4 to 8 civilians died and 30 to 40 were wounded. Many of the protesters who were demonstrating against workers' rights violations, long work hours, poor working conditions, low wages, and child labor were arrested and served terms of life imprisonment, death sentences, and so forth. And those who died were hailed as Haymarket martyrs. The Haymarket Affair had a lasting effect on the workers' movement and helped push forward the demands for better working conditions across the world. This year's May Day events unleashed pent-up frustration after 3 years of COVID-19 restrictions. For months, Europe has seen a series of strikes as workers demand higher wages in the face of record-high inflation rates. In the 19-nation euro currency zone, the annual inflation rate was at an all-time high of 10.6% in October. It retreated slightly to 10.1% in November, but that was still the second-highest monthly rate since the creation of the euro in 1999. Hundreds of thousands of people massed in cities around France to vent their anger against President Emmanuel Macron's pension reform. Protests took a violent turn as the day progressed, with protesters and security forces clashing. Interior Minister Gerald Darmanin told reporters that at least 108 police officers were wounded, with 291 detained across the country. Protesters threw projectiles at police and broke windows of business buildings, including banks and estate agents in Paris. Security forces used tear gas and water cannons in return. Trade unions had called for more than 300 rallies and vowed to continue fighting even after the changes were signed into law. Protests had started largely peacefully, although police in Paris arrested 22 people, while in Lyon, police used tear gas to disperse crowds after bank windows were smashed. Sophie Binet, leader of the CGT union, said Macron's pension reform had left her isolated.
You just have to look at the procession behind. You can see that today is a historic May Day. There hasn't been such an important May Day in France since 1936, so we can't talk about running out of steam. We can't talk about decay. We can see that this day of mobilization is a stinging denial of all the bets made by the government and of the choice that the government was thinking of making to force us to turn the page.
Protesters mobilized against President Emmanuel Macron's recent move to raise the retirement age from 62 to 64. Organizers see pension reform as a threat to hard-fought worker rights, while Macron argues it's economically necessary as the population ages.
Option for today and a better tomorrow. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en.
IRIB English Radio.
The stroke that saved Islam from Arab-Israelite floods. In the name of God, the All-Compassionate, the All-Merciful. Salam everybody and welcome to an exclusive feature on a special occasion. Today, the 17th of the month of Shawwal is a memorable day in history on which, in the year 5 AH, corresponding to 627 AD, Islam triumphed over a joint Arab-Israelite plot, with Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny, proclaiming one of his famous statements. The stroke of Ali on the day of Khandaq is superior to the worship of Thagalain, that is, mankind and genies. Dear listeners, stay with us for some interesting facts. Thus spoke the Prophet of Islam when his dear cousin and son-in-law, Imam Ali, peace upon him, emerged unscathed from the cloud of dust after a life and death combat with the now fallen champion of the Arabs, Amr ibn Abdu'ad, who, as the embodiment of infidelity, was also the representative of the Israelites in a joint bid to obliterate Islam. Why did the messenger of mercy hail the stroke of Dhul-Faqar, or the twin-bladed sword of Imam Ali, peace upon him, as better than the acts of worship of all mankind, acts that include prayers, fasting, supplications, piety, jihad, martyrdom, recitation and explanation of the Noble Quran, philanthropy, exploring human and rational sciences, and etc.? Were all those companions that had gathered around the Prophet of Peace since the declaration of his monotheistic mission and endured persecution and displacement from their homes and would set up the caliphate after him for spreading Muslim rule over large parts of Asia, Africa and Europe, insignificant creatures compared to this single act of Imam Ali, peace upon him? Was the mercy unto the creation swayed by bonds of blood and kinship to express such a statement, recorded diligently by all the compilers of hadith, whether Sunni or Shiite, for the person whom he had groomed since childhood, years before divine revelation dawned upon him and he began to acquire followers? It is outright blasphemy to entertain such thoughts about Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny, regarding whose flawless integrity and truthfulness the Almighty Creator says in the opening ayahs of Surah Najm, in response to the doubts raised by some of those who had developed companionship with him. Your companion, the Prophet, has neither gone astray nor gone amiss, nor does he speak out of his own desire. It is just the revelation that is revealed to him. It is also worth noting that God Almighty, who has immortalized in the Noble Quran the chaotic situation of the new Muslims and the ideas of apostasy that flashed across the minds of several of the Prophet's companions at the sight of the formidable 10,000-strong force of Arab-Israelite confederates besieging Medina during the crucial events of the Battle of Khandaq, has also made it crystal clear in this same surah titled Ahzab, or the Confederates, in Ayah 21, in the Prophet of Allah, there is certainly for you a good exemplar for those who look forward to Allah and the last day and remember Allah greatly. It is outside the scope of this brief radio program to go into details of the Battle of Khandaq, so called because of the ditch dug around the vulnerable parts of Medina as a barrier to invasion on the suggestion of the Prophet's Iranian companion Salman Farsi, an unprecedented practice in Arabia. Therefore, in order to better understand the dynamism of Islam, the wisdom of the Prophet's words, and the peerless personality of his divinely designated vicegerent, Imam Ali, peace upon him, here are ayahs 10 to 20 of Surah Ahzab regarding the Muslims of weak faith and the hypocrites amongst them, as well as the faithful whom the Lord Most High has eulogized. When they came at you from above and below you, And when the eyes rolled with fear and the hearts leapt to the throats, and you entertained misgivings about Allah. And when the hypocrites were saying, as well as those in whose hearts is a sickness, Allah and His Prophet did not promise us anything except delusion. And when a group of them said, O people of Yathrib, this is not a place for you, so go back. And a group of them sought the Prophet's permission, saying, Our homes lie exposed to the enemy. Although they were not exposed, they only sought to flee. Had they been invaded from its flanks, and had they been asked to apostatize, they would have done so with only a mild hesitation. Though they had certainly pledged to Allah before that they would not turn their backs to flee. And pledges given to Allah are accountable. Say, flight will not avail you should you flee from death or from being killed. And then you will be led to enjoy only for a little while. Allah knows those of you who discourage others and those who say to their brethren, Come to us. And they take little part in the battle, grudging you their help. So, when there is panic, you see them observing you, their eyes rolling like someone fainting at death. Then, when the panic is over, they scold you with their sharp tongues. In their greed for riches, they never have had faith. So Allah has made their works fail. And that is easy for Allah. They suppose the Confederates have not left yet. And were the Confederates to come again, they would wish they were in the desert with the Bedouins asking about your news. And if they were with you, they would fight but a little. This vivid description by God Almighty is not of the pagan Arabs, Israelites, and other enemies of Islam. It was the state of affairs on the day of the Battle of Khandaq, of the weak faith and hypocrites amongst the Prophet's companions, which no Muslim can dispute. Here we recite to you ayahs 22 and 23 of this same Surah Ahzab, in which the Almighty Creator then praises the Prophet's few faithful companions who stood their ground, and it is obvious as to whom the reference is. But when the faithful saw the Confederates, they said, This is what Allah and His Prophet had promised us, and Allah and His Prophet were true, and it only increased them in faith and submission. Among the faithful are men who fulfill what they have pledged to Allah. Of them are some who have fulfilled their pledge, and of them are some who still wait, and they have not changed in the least. Imam Ali, peace upon him, who has said in explicit words that Ayah 23 directly refers to him, took the field on the command of the Prophet. And after inviting Amr ibn Abdubad to Islam and receiving a negative reply, challenged him to fight and send him to the netherworld, but not before allowing him to renew the life and death combat, because the cowardly representative of the Arab-Israelite Confederates, when hurled to the ground, had dared to spit at him. That was among the reasons the Prophet hailed his cousin's selfless feat that was solely for the sake of God and without personal emotions involved in the combat. as superior to the worship of all mankind and genies, since he knew the plot of the fifth column amongst his companions, who, in case of Amr's triumph, intended to hand over the prophet over to the Arab-Israelite confederates in order to obliterate Islam. When Amr ibn Abdu'l-Wahd was killed, the Arab-Israelite force, which was watching the combat from the other side of the ditch, lost heart, and as God Almighty sent a strong gales to disrupt their encampment, the enemies fled. Ayah 25 of Surah Ahzab says in this regard, Allah turned back the faithless in their rage, without their attaining any advantage. And Allah spared the faithful of fighting. And Allah is all strong, almighty.
As-salamu alaykum wa rahmatullah.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
Hame ba wujood ghudde saratani Israel mukhalifim.
All of us are opposed to the cancer's tumor, Israel.
Wajh mushtarak hame wahdat ummat islami.
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
This is part of the speech delivered by Ayatollah Khamenei in a meeting with Iranian officials and the ambassadors of Islamic countries on the auspicious occasion of Eid al-Fitr on April 22, 2023. So, what should the Islamic world strategy be regarding Palestine? Today, the Islamic world strategy regarding Palestine should be to help the forces inside that country. The resistance front's endeavours are, of course, valuable. Wherever they are, just like us, we too are standing up for the Palestinian issue. The resistance front's endeavours are valuable. These efforts should be focused on strengthening those who are fighting and risking their lives inside Palestine. The last point is the following. We need to truly pay attention to this point. What is the reason for the escalation of the internal struggles in Palestine? It is because of their inclination towards Islam. We had seen what their situation was like before, back when Islamic tendencies weren't popular among Palestinian groups. Now, some were communists and others were not communists, but they weren't Islamic. These developments did not exist.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
From the time that Islamic tendencies were born in the Palestinian resistance fighters, and from the time this tendency increased on a daily basis, continuing up until today, progress has been made in this manner, in the way the Palestinians fight. So the reason for their success is Islam. Islam. And the enemy has realized this. That's why you see them working against Islam around the world. They are all engaged in fighting Islam, doing all kinds of things. Of course, their fight against Islam will get nowhere. The Holy Quran states, do they seek to outmaneuver Allah? But it is the faithless who are the ones who are outmaneuvered. The Holy Quran, Surah 52, verse 42. They are making efforts, but the Almighty God will nullify their efforts. This is our duty today. The Islamic Republic recognized this duty from the very beginning. Imam Khomeini, rahmatullah alayh, pioneered this path. He considered the issue of Palestine to be the primary issue, or one of the primary issues, of the Islamic world. This movement started in the Islamic Republic from the time it was formed, and praise God, it is continuing. We hope that our dear nation, our people, and our youth will see the day when Muslims from around the world can freely perform their prayers in Quds. May God's greetings, mercy, and blessings be upon you.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope.
Think better. Welcome to a better you. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Eruba Shavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Pereza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Amin Alemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Around the world with reporters.
Britain now has a new king. At the first coronation the world has seen in 70 years, the Archbishop of Canterbury crowned British royals Charles and Camilla at Westminster Abbey on Saturday, ushering in the reign of King Charles III. The main focus of British state media was the splendour and grandeur of the spectacle. However, controversy still surrounded the day. Anti-monarchy activists belonging to the Peaceful Not My King protest movement were rounded up and arrested ahead of the coronation. The arrests included group leaders.
It's a completely peaceful demonstration. The police, without telling us why, without telling us where they're taking them, have arrested all of our lead organisers. They've seized all our placards. It feels like something out of a police state because we still don't know why anyone's been arrested and we still don't know where they're taking our people. You know, Britain's meant to be a democracy, but Charles isn't treating it like one.
Even before the event took place, criticism of the royal family remained relatively widespread. A survey by the National Centre for Social Research showed public support for the monarchy has fallen to a historic low. A total of 45% of respondents said either it should be abolished, was not at all important, or not very important. Young people particularly expressed embarrassment over the institution's continued existence. Elsewhere, similar polling revealed that many of the King's subjects across the Commonwealth would vote to remove the UK monarch as their head of state, raising speculation that more nations will ditch the Commonwealth in the near future. The ongoing cost of living crisis, undemocratic power, and seemingly endless scandals are among the many reasons experts believe the UK royals' popularity has plummeted.
I don't think anyone can be happy, especially looking at the economic state right now. Well, you only have to go out in the streets and some of the famous streets in London and look how many people are suffering and sleeping on the streets. And that is quite